So this is the Cool Thing in Small Spaces seminar. So it is the art and science of intros and vitros. So one of the first things that I'll talk about is kind of like, okay, who am I? Now, I've talked to a couple of you, but for those that don't know, I am Polaris, the founder of the Northern Dragons Demo Group. I'm probably one of the most active coders in the Dragons and have written watts of 4 kilobyte code. The most recent, quote unquote, I say that because that's not counting anything that we intend to release at Pilgrimage, is a 4 kilobyte Evolutio, which has been released at Assembly 2004. Now, I am definitely contactable, so you can drop me an email if you have any questions or any concerns after the seminar. Also, we are the group that wrote the invitation, so that's another thing which you might be interested in asking me about. So what are we supposed to talk about? Well, I promised Rich, but I don't see him here, so talk about anything you want to talk about, but for the most part, we're going to showcase some intros and vitros. We're going to highlight what's special about them, and I'm going to tell you some tales from the field, sort of like things that are hard to know without actually actively developing them. So there's some design advice, some code advice, and I'm hoping to have a question period for about 15 minutes for questions. Now, what am I not really talking about is anything larger than really 16 kilobytes. 64 kilobytes are quite a different beast. I'm not going to talk about the tool called Verkzung, which is the Farbach tool, and simply because it is sort of a different thing altogether. That was the usage rather than creation. Things outside the Win32 platform I'm not really going to discuss simply because it's not really my expertise. I do know a little bit about things outside the Win32 platform, for example, Linux, but I am not entirely confident about that, so I don't want to end up steering you wrong in any way. Another thing I won't talk about is API wars, OpenGL 2, OpenGL 1, DirectX, whatever. At a certain point, there's certain issues with creating something small no matter what your API is. And on top of that, if you have any questions during it, you know, you can either do one of two things. You can just raise your hand, let me know. You know, I'll flag you over and you can ask your question right then and there. Or just jot it down, let me know at the end. But certainly let me know during if you'd like. This presentation will be made available, so you can download it from wherever the rest of the Pilgrimage stuff will end up being. So that's also something you don't have to really take notes, but if you want to, that's up to you. The focus of this presentation is really on intros rather than vitros, but I do talk about vitros a little bit. So it's PowerPoint in a can. I mean, this is my seminar, this is my speech, but I also want it to be a little bit flexible. So I'm going to focus on things a little bit depending on what the crowd is. So how many people here are actually active in the demo scene? Raise your hands. Okay. How many people are actively writing productions? Okay. Guybrush, you got to raise your hand. You're supposed to be coding right now. What roles? So we got some coders in the group? Coders in the room? We got some coders, all right. Musicians? Yeah, okay. How about artists, like graphics artists, models, that kind of thing? Okay, all right. I got an idea what the platform we got. What kind of platform? Are we mostly a Win32 crowd? Linux? Okay. Other? BIOS? Anything like that? Other? Guybrush, what do you got?
Gateway events.
Gateway, oh, absolutely. Okay. All right. So is there anything in specific that anyone wants me to say, like, please talk about this before I get started? Once, twice, Bob's your uncle. There we go. So what are intros? Now, I'm not going to talk about this in depth simply because I'm anticipating you have some knowledge of it. But they first started as basically crack tros, right? So they were graphical brag tags. It's really what it is. It's about ego. They appeared at the start of crack games, and they gave greetings to other crackers as well as displayed the credits for the crack authors. And they did that, of course, using pseudonyms or aliases. So you can say, hey, we're so incredibly cool, we managed to crack Doom 3 in X number of days, or who knows what. I mean, it's a different time. We're talking about the late 1970s, 80s, and the very early 90s. But that's what initially started intros. Now, the cracks themselves were small. So they started making these things as little graphical programs for fun, instead of just cracks. They did it for the craft of doing the graphics, rather than cracking software. This gave birth to the demo scene. Demos are basically unrestricted typically, for all intensive purposes, real-time computer graphics animation without a constraint on size. Intros have a limited size, and that's really the big difference. So why do you make them? Well, I mean, there's a technical edge that's involved in doing something very small. And you're exploring real-time art. You make it for the same purpose of making a demo, but you also do it to say, hey, look how cool we can do this. It's only 4K, 512 bytes, 16K, what have you. So each one is really kind of a personal brag tag saying, apparently this is possible. And it's experimental, it's fun, it can pull your hair out. You know, it's kind of crazy that way. I think every intro I've ever released has personally resulted in some white hairs. I'm skipping gray altogether, I'm going away. Now, nonetheless, there's still some that have more spirit and design than others. It's not always what you do, and that's been a shift in the scene. We've gone from apparently this is possible to apparently this looks cool. And that has resulted in a real change. Now, that originally started with demos, but it's flowed down as capability has changed on the hardware, and the hardware has become more capable, and people have become more inventive about using it. That's flowed down into the intro scene as well. So, King of Kings demo parties, these productions get shown at demo parties, just like Pilgrimage, for audience favor, the glory and the girls, and prizes. Pilgrimage is just one of the events this happens at, so they spur creators to create more things. And I can pretty much guarantee that there's going to be some intros released at Pilgrimage. So what does it look like? Well, I want to showcase a few examples. But for more of these things, you know, you've got your PUET, your scene.org, and your 256B for byte.com. So those are productions that are restricted to being 256 bytes in size. All of these productions that I'm going to show you have been released at other demo parties, and I want to do it with a particular point in mind. So I'm going to be doing it to illustrate something. I'm going to show it to you if you haven't seen them before, if you don't know how they ranked, what have you. I just want you to get an idea of what these productions were and realize that they were ranked. People voted for them or voted against them or voted for something different. In your mind's eye or on a sheet of paper or what have you, jot down what you think is the best because I want to compare it to the end result of what actually happened at those parties, and I'm hoping that we can come to a conclusion together. So I'm going to start and do that. So these are the productions we're going to see. So the first one is the Sam Angelus Observation, Smells Like Fish, Evolutio, 99 Beers, and the Ethereum. And that's the order that we're going to watch them in. So, now some of them we might not watch for the interest of time, the whole thing, but I do want to get the feel across, so we're going to try to watch as much of them as possible. And for 256 bytros, drops, and two. There we go. Now it's telling me what to watch. Thank you. All right, so that is the first production that we're showing. That's San Angeles Observation. So the next one, I believe, is Smells Like Fish. So these have been 4 kilobytes that we've been showing so far. That's included in the zip as per default. Actually, that's a really good point. In 4K, you end up sometimes doing some nasty tricks to make it 4K. So you end up having to decide where you draw the line. Your box was on this side of the line.
Yeah!
Move it back to normal fonts. Anyway, next production. 99 beers.
6 bottles of beer on the wall. 6 bottles of beer. Take one down. Pass it around. 5 bottles of beer on the wall. 5 bottles of beer on the wall. 5 bottles of beer. Take one down. Pass it around. 4 bottles of beer on the wall. 4 bottles of beer on the wall. 4 bottles of beer. Take one down. Pass it around. 3 bottles of beer on the wall. 3 bottles of beer on the wall. 3 bottles of beer. Take one down. Pass it around. 2 bottles of beer on the wall. 2 bottles of beer on the wall. 2 bottles of beer. Take one down. Pass it around. 1 bottle of beer on the wall. 1 bottle of beer on the wall. 1 bottle of beer. Take one down. Pass it around. 0 bottles of beer on the wall.
That's fun. One thing I'll mention about it is that it's using the standard Windows voicing. Now, it doesn't work, as far as I know, on Win2K. So if you're having problems running it, the line was over here for you. So the following one is the Ethereum. So this is the last 4K that we'll view.4K line of productions. So next we'll look at two 256 byte trucks. Okay. Actually, it works fine on a laptop. It's the projector.
The projector doesn't like
that. It doesn't like
low res modes.
Yeah. So, apparently I have just, there we go.
Turn it on?
Yeah. So.
I think two works, but I've never tried this one.
Okay, let's try two. I accidentally hit the key again. Let's see if I can get a signal. Come on, darling. There we go. Tubes might work. Ah, okay. All right, well, I'll tell you what. Here's what we'll do. For tubes at least. I'll flip the whole thing over. Okay. How those rankings turned out.
Okay.
This is only going to take a minute. We'll just wait a moment. Okay. So just to get a show of hands here, just for what their number one, number two, number three demo was, who thought the San Angeles observation was their number one production there? Smells like fish? Evolucio? 99 beers? Oh, okay. The Ethereum? Oh, big crowd. Of course, I won't do that for the Bytros because nobody really got to see them. Second place, you know, at least we got a feel for where people felt things were at, so we'll leave it at that. Let's review actually what happened at the events. San Angeles Observation was released at Assembly 2003 or 2004, and because of a disqualification of the top entry, this was the winning entry. They disqualified the top one because of copyrights with music. And subsequently, everything else shifted up one, and subsequently, this is the top entry of Assembly 2004 intro competition. Very fun. Smells Like Fish by Axis Denied was released also in the same compo, Assembly 2004, and ranked 8th. it's a technically good production. You've got a lot of shading with the OpenGL. You've got some very smooth motion. The music maybe is a little bit weak, but it's there, it works, it flows. It's a very good technical production. Northern Dragon stole fourth place with a much simpler design with a story behind it. Now, it is a little bit sort of... It started as a simple design, but to actually put all that content inside of 4K was really, really annoying. And we have what Tom called earlier the technical artist, the artist that understands the technical world. Because I first started trying to create a tool to do vector graphics out of artwork, to make these kinds of images. And he said, no, that's insane. Let me draw the polygons. And he actually gave me concave or convex polygons with three sides, not n-gons or anything else. So technical artists are really good to have in your demo group. So that's fourth place. But you can see that it ranked ahead, far ahead, another production which was technically superior because of a sense of aesthetic and design. 99 Beers by Sifo, released August 2003, ranked 9th. Once again, really not a technically strong production. But at a party, like a demo party, where you have a digital Woodstock-like event, that assembly is with 6,000 PCs, the lights are out, the everything is just a digital mayhem, this thing captures attention, captures the spirit of the moment, captures the spirit of a demo party. So it ranks 9th. The Ethereum by Northern Dragons ranks dead last. And we're sitting there going, what the hell is this beer thing doing to us? This doesn't make sense. This is wrong. So horribly, horribly wrong. And we figured, okay, we need naked chicks. We need to put them in our productions right now. They need to be holding, finished vodka or something and say, vote me, or something like that. I mean, it was absolutely gut-wrenching time in the history of the Northern Dragons. But as time went on, you just sort of looked at it and said, oddly enough, maybe it is kind of boring. The music is really cool. It's got a synth, it's got the reverb, We did all kinds of technically advanced features, but we didn't pull it together very well in a production which really left someone going, oh, that was cool.
Boring.
Yeah. He can say that because he wrote part of it. How is different from the first one?
Yes. Why I ranked this one 14th?
Remember, at demo parties, they vote.
Different years.
Yeah. We're talking about Assembly 2003, whereas the other two, the first three were from Assembly 2004, so that was this year. These two are from Assembly 2000. I'll show you. So that's 2004. So, Drops by Blaze or 3SC, released 1998, ranked first. Very cool byte tro. Same kind of thing for Tubes. This is the historical quintessential 256 byte tro. Really cool production. And in fact, in the pilgrimage invite, you might recognize a tube which looks remarkably similar to this. That is intentional. It's in the room with the Heaven 7 temple, along with the fire effect right past the plasma, and it's designed as a tribute to that.
How many bites did it take you to make your version of the
tube? The objective of the invite wasn't size restricted. So to be honest, I wouldn't be too surprised. I'd say the way we did it was one of the things we wanted the invite to work on a variety of platforms. It was very hard to do that with all the different pieces that we had. So we did it in a really stupid, really cheap, really fast way, which broke probably Guybrush's heart, because he wrote the first one, which was really smart, really technical, the right way to do it. Then I ripped it apart, and I replaced it with the stupidest hack in the world. But it's 1,000 times faster. So we went with it, because we had the effects in the invite are culled. According to your, it uses PBS and BSP inside the invitation to cull the effects, so they're only rendered when they're possibly visible. However, you can still have a variety of effects on the screen at the same time, like the plasma tunnel, the fire texture, and this tunnel all on the screen at the same time, all being rendered to flat textures for the type of field that we're going for using set render targets. So it can be a nightmare to get that kind of performance. So we really worked hard to make sure every effect, which is really a 2D effect inside the imitation, was as fast and streamlined as possible.
They're animated GIFs?
No, they're not. It's actually an animated model. It's an actual three-dimensional model designed with a texture, a single texture. And our Coke can has one texture too. But it doesn't say Coke, actually. So if you're surprised by the rankings, there's a few other things that I can point you to. One of the best pieces of documentation out there on the internet about the importance of design is something from the Party website. And it said, you know, talks about a wild compo and says how this nameless group came in with the production and they rocked everything with something that really captured spirit. And also you can see some of that being discussed from some of the assembly proceedings in the compo studio there, so you can download those as well. So for those that are interested in creating an intro, you got your real-time music and graphical effects. But because of the small space, you got to change the way that you think. Data isn't stored anymore. You can't have a model of a tube or, you know, a texture. You have to think of ways of generating that. So the most important thing isn't about your platform or your language, but it's about how you are going to mathematically make that production with algorithms. This is the big picture idea. For example, a simple texture, this is 256 by 256 in grayscale. Even as a JPEG, which is a pretty good compression algorithm, and it does well with grayscale images, this takes 6K to store. I ripped this out of a production that doesn't have that, like one of our productions that we're going to be releasing at Pilgrimage, that doesn't have that much space to spare. Instead of storing that, you've got to basically generate it. So to generate the texture, this is some pseudocode that essentially generates that texture. You can see it's looping across the Y at the top of the texture and the X, so it's going top down, left to right, and this is basically a height algorithm, or to generate the 255 range of color. It's a distance algorithm, so you can see essentially it's the Pythagorean theorem, because you've got a square root from the center. So I'm taking the distance between x minus 128, because it's 256 bytes since texture, x by 128, y by 128, multiplying those out so those are squared, and then I'm dividing by 128 times my 255 and clamping it to get the black colors. Even without any kind of code size optimization, this takes about 200 bytes on the worst compiler on the planet. Savings of over 15 times. That's what you have to do in order to generate the data inside a 4K or smaller or larger of an intro. So that's really what it takes. It's really, first off, a different mindset. That's more important than any other coder tricks, implementation platform, or anything else. Now, of course, once you've thought algorithmically, you got to code it in something. So your intro or bytro eventually will become an executable program or something similar running on a PC. So this can typically involve an assembler or compiler, and that will generate the binary code that's executed. For many productions, this is assembly, but that isn't always necessarily true. For example, Java, it's possible to have a jar file, which is basically like a zip file, with J3D, which is a native library that assembly supports in their rules. And I actually have a little production here, which is a test that I did with the Dragons to see. Now, I didn't write this. This is from a magazine article that taught J3D, a Java Developer Journal. And I said, okay, can I make this thing small? Or how small can I make it? This thing is approximately just under 3 kilobytes. And of course, if I actually click. And you can see it has a window. And you might notice a little bit of material shading there, some light sourcing. And it's interacting with the desktop for 3K. This is pretty neat, kind of neat. So it is possible to make certain things in Java. Turbo Pascal, you've got article in Hoogie 22 that basically says, hey, I made a 4K in Turbo Pascal, and here's how I did it. So you can do it in Turbo Pascal. Same kind of thing, Hoogie 28 at Disk Magazine also has someone writing intros in Delphi. C and C++, you've got Quack by Caldox, which won 7th place at Assembly 2002. And you've got Evolutio from the Northern Dragons, which got 4th place and does not have a single line of assembler in the code. None. It is all a Visual C project, Visual C++ 6.0. And part of the reason why we did that was because we made it in like a week. Because we were losing our minds. Well, okay, I was having a personal crisis because it was kind of like, what do you mean we won't have anything for assembly? It's the first time in 3 years. We always have something for assembly. So we ended up working like crazy and we got something together. The Ethereum was written in assembler using NASM. Trees, which is another Northern Dragons production, was written in MASM. Now, I can get into something else about that and why they might look a little bit different. There's some other technical issues that make trees really very simple. It's because we didn't exploit certain tweaks that you can do. Because we were told, according to COMPO rules, the line was here, when actually it was over here. And we checked to see if a certain technique, which I'll teach you later, was kosher. We were told no, and then the top three entries all used that. So we were sitting there going, oh my God, what have you done to us? And then we complained, and then we got bad reputations, and it was just a mess. But I can chat about that more once you actually know the technique. So the biggest thing, though, is use your imagination. It's not your platform. It's your algorithms. It's what you're going to be doing inside your program more than anything else. Then, of course, the next thing you're going to be doing is pushing technical limits. So you're exploiting the algorithm. You're doing the mathematical formulas. You're reducing them. You're taking advantage of Taylor series, all kinds of wild and crazy things you can do with math to reduce the operations that you have. And then at some point, you're going to use coder tricks. So assembly does give you the greatest flexibility and the most options, period. Like, it's machine language. There's nothing you can't do in assembly. As you go into higher level languages, you end up paying for a bit of that with the abstraction that you have. So admittedly, there's tricks you can do, but you're not limited to that. The most important thing is the algorithm. After that, your coded tricks. The third stage that I've described here is your operating system. It's knowing what it means to have an executable on your operating system and what it means to have a Windows PE portable executable file. And why does all of a sudden my Hello World program default out of Visual C++ take 26 kilobytes? So, or 24, pardon me. So the largest change is possible for C++, which is probably your best bet for getting started, is how you code in your compiler. This is a simple program that displays a message box using the Windows 32 API called Silly Example. And when you compile it straight out of the box with default Visual C++ settings, you get a 24 kilobyte EXE. A little beefy 4K, 4 kilobyte intro competition. So what do you do? Well, you take the same program and you start tweaking your compiler. You say things like, okay, you know what? Don't give me your default runtime entry. I'm going to take, instead of using the default that comes with it, I'm going to basically say it's come to my main. Then I'm going to merge sections of code. Every executable has certain sections inside it, and I'll show you a diagram of that. Over here, you're saying, don't give me the standard alignments. And this doesn't actually mean don't run on Windows 98. It says, don't add the extra 4 kilobytes of alignment that it doesn't actually really need for Windows 98 anyway. Don't ask me why they called it that, but that's what it means. So what happens? Essentially the same thing. We've gotten rid of the Visual C++ library with that. We have the section alignment that's not required. And we've merged the sections for text, our data, which is read-only data, and the initial data section. As a result, you end up with an executable that's less than 1 kilobyte. The biggest challenge is the executable alignment, because Windows 32 programs all have a certain amount of fluff in them. If you look at them, one of the things that they have is the standard string that says, hey, you're trying to run this on a DOS box, idiot. This is a Windows program. So it has that string in the code to recognize which operating system you have. MS-DOS doesn't necessarily have the same executable header challenges that a Windows program does. There's two types of programs in MS-DOS. There's COM files, like command.com, which are limited to 64 kilobyte because of the memory model they use. And there's exe files, which are used for a large executable. But COM files have absolutely no headers. You start a COM file, it gets splatted into memory, it jumps into your code and says, okay, I'm all yours, do what you want to do. So there's no fluff in a COM file. That's the reason why 256 bytros are all pretty much COM files, and they're all MS-DOS based. Pretty much. So this technique of trying to squeeze more, one of the first things that we did in trees was said, okay, there's a product called UPX. You can see a link down there, which is an executable packer. People use UPX to take their code, they shrink it down, and it gives you a resulting Windows exe. And what that exe does is it takes the code that you had and extracts it to memory, which I know is bad for memory fragmentation, but anyway, extracts it to memory and runs the program from memory. But here is the fundamental glitch. Your result is a Windows program with all the fluff and the PE headers and the alignments of a Windows program. So you can shrink things, and in trees we used UPX to shrink it down to 496 kilobytes, thereabouts, I think we would have a little bit of space. But you still have a Windows program. So someone got smart, and they said, okay, you know what, let's get around this. So you can see, this is some of the headers that you've got right here. DOS header, DOS stub, PE header, section table, and some sections. So the technique to get around this is called file dropper. File dropper takes a Windows program and it attaches it to an MS-DOS COM file. The COM file flushes this program when it's run out to disk, writing or dropping the file onto the hard drive, runs it, and then deletes it once it's actually finished. Guess what rule this breaks in a lot of compos? The do not write to disk rule. Subsequently, that's one thing that you have to check for. And that's how we ended up being caught when it came to assembly in 2002, because we said, okay, we want to use a technique that involves writing to disk. They said, no, you can't do that. We said, okay, very good, we won't. And then things changed from there, and they tried to adjust the entries because they used an illegal technique, and that's what all that schmoz is about. So be careful at the event. And I've already made sure when the first rules for pilgrims came out, I said, okay, this is a common technique. Make sure you don't ban it out because it will change the way things are. So pilgrimage was savvy of that experience. Now, it's not just enough to take that file and then dump it to disk, because you're going to have like a 16K file maybe, and you're going to be dumping it to disk. So your COM file, which is, by the way, limited to a total of 64K, so if you were taking something like an uncompressed version of a Farbrosh demo, which might be a Meg or something, who knows, right? But assuming that it's larger than 64 and they're using compression to shrink it, this won't work as a file dropper. Because the COM file, which puts it to disk, and the exe that's attached to it would be larger than the maximum size of a COM file. But what happens is you take that COM file, which spits it out onto disk, runs it, and then deletes afterwards, and you use a DOS-based, you know, good old 1980s, 1990s technology packer, which is just like UPX for Windows, but it's for the DOS platform. Very good one is APAC. And so you can spit it up to disk in a compressed format. To give you an idea of how much that saves you, trees with UPX was 4 kilobytes. 2.3 kilobytes is the end result of trees released if it's actually compressed using a file dropper. So we had 1.7 kilobytes to play with that we didn't use because we couldn't use this technique. For example, the Ethereum is, in native size, is roughly 16 kilobytes, and it's compressed down to 4008. The technique has a telltale signature. When you run a production that has it, a DOS box shows up, only momentarily, and I'll show you this. Watch it. There. Do you see it? Of course, now the screen's gone black. There you go. Okay. Should go back. Yay! So that's how you can see a file dropper and the characteristics of a file dropper. But it doesn't stop there. The innovation with intros to shrink things hasn't stopped at file dropping. There's another technique. Now, this page here discusses a few tools that you can do in order to take your executable program and make it into a file dropper. So there's one by Frankie at Smash Designs, which you can download, called P2EXE or P2COM. So that's portable EXE, like a Win32 to a COM file. And also the very first one was probably the Gem Dropper. So another feature is that unless you're running your WinXP box as an administrator, if you're post-SP1, it won't let you write to the root folder. And a lot of the file droppers will do that. They'll write to the root folder because it's the smallest string that you can have. Write my Windows executable as C:/something.exe and nothing more, because I'm using those bytes. So you can use their tool, but be aware, or make your own. It's not that hard to write your own. And actually, the PE:EXE includes source code. So in the Dragons, we have our own file dropper, which I crafted. Now, past that, there's something called cab dropping. Now, how many of you know what a cab file is? A few people. Okay. For those that don't, cab file is the Microsoft technique for shrinking their code on a CD into their operating system code onto a single CD. It's like a zip file. It uses LZX compression. And it's essentially, for all intensive purposes, like a zip file. I assume everyone knows what a zip file is, right? Okay, cool. So a cap file is a Windows 32 operating system zip file. Your operating system probably has cap files as part of its disk. Because it's part of the operating system, the tools to extract it are usually native on the OS. They're local. Now, in Hoogie 28, Disk Magazine, Gem introduced this technique, and since then it's become the de facto standard pretty much. Most entries in assembly 2004 for kilobytes, 4 kilobytes, are actually cab droppers. So how does this work? Well, cab dropper essentially uses the operating system's extract or extract 32 in order to extract a production.cab to a folder, run the production, and then delete it. Once again, file dropping, but with using a cab file. It doesn't drop the cab file. The cab file is there. It drops your Windows executable, but it is using a cab file. Now, the real pain, though, which you might have noticed in the last slide, is that you have some operating system dependencies. On a lot of platforms, it's called extract.exe. On WinDK and XP, it's called extract32.exe. So how do you get around this? Because the really nice, attractive thing about cab files is that the code to decompress your production is not included in your production. If you have a packed exe, you're decompressing to memory using APAC, right? So that you have the decompression code inside your production. With cab files, you're using the OS to do that, so you don't have that. So how do you get around that? Well, you just call both. One will work, the other one won't. And you end up with this rather ugly sentence that says, extract is not recognized as an internal external command operating, blah, blah, blah. But people forgive that, because all of a sudden they're, boom, into your production, and it only takes a minute. Of course, if you're really, really quite specifically pure of heart, And I say that because, you know, I really thought cab dropping was really ugly when I first saw it. And I was like, oh man, we'll never do that. And then I was like struggling to get music code into something. And I just didn't have space. And I was like, all right, I'm selling my soul. We're using cab dropping now. There's nothing we can do about it. It's a must be because this thing needs music. Right? So it can be a little bit messy. Now, on top of that, you can trick the cab the format itself into having the actual commands to extract it. So the call to extract, the call to the exe, the delete x.exe, wherever you put it, actually inside the cab file. And typically, the first ones did that with a hex editor. Now, the cab file itself isn't necessarily an actual executable. So you end up with this batch file, which has all this binary data in it, which is a cab file, with some commands at the top of it, and it starts with MSCF, which of course spits out the MSCF is not recognized as an internal or external program. So once again, it looks ugly. Of course, when you're struggling to get music into something,
can't you still redirect outputs to null?
You willing to spend the extra bytes?
Well,
it's your choice.
Depends where those messages are coming from.
Yeah, you could use that technique to try to get rid of those messages and so on. But your production becomes essentially a batch file, right? So this is what this batch file looks like. Now, of course, it's huge, but you can see, essentially, it starts off with that. I'll do word wrap. Okay, set t to temp.exe. Now you'll notice, hey, wait a minute, this is going to work on Windows XP, because I'm no longer writing to the root folder. Okay, extract 32. Deletes it, exits. There you go. Simple as that. When you run it, junk, then bang, production. You noticed? Did you care? You got a cool production, right? Depends. It's all techniques. So that's cab drop. That will save you 500, 600 bytes. Thereabouts. So the Ethereum, that depends on your code. That's another freaky thing about using compression. How compressible is your code? How many zeros do you have in your code? One of the really big pain in the asses, and I'll say that because it is a monstrous pain, is when you're coding with something that's ultimately compressed, you'll find things like, okay, if I include data in the production instead of a simple loop, like let's say you have an array of 1,000 elements, and instead of just going for I equals 0, you know, up to 1,000, set array, you know, I to 0, if you store the whole thing and you just have 1,000 zeros inside a header file somewhere, it compresses better than the code to fill it with zeros. So you're sitting there, this is making me code like a dumbass, but it's small, so I'm going to. And we have comments in Northern Dragon's code all over the place saying, okay, this is horrible, this is nasty, we know it, but hey, it works, and hey, it's small. So you can see the Ethereum also shrinks down. So we started with 16K, using a file dropping technique, you go down around 4K, and you can save, you know, a couple hundred K by using the cab file. Cab droppers, tools to make cab files out of your production, no matter what exe language you use, exist. Pretty good one is from Gem. Another good one, I think Lumac runs that, and that's 20.4.net. So in the future, as operating systems add more features, more technology, more techniques, you're going to see other types of intros and other things exploited in that operating system. So in the future, you can look forward to seeing a variety of other types of creative programming, because that's all this is creative programming. How do we make something cool in a really small space? So the biggest thing is that algorithm thing again, thinking big picture. How am I going to do it? What features am I going to use? And I can tell you there's entire paradigms that haven't been released yet, that haven't been discussed in the world. And I can actually say that with definite fact, because I'm rushing to finish a production that makes use of a paradigm that has never been released before in the hopes of releasing it here. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. But we did a test 2 years ago, and we haven't seen anyone ever reproduce the same kind of thing that we had. So we're looking at doing this type of intro program. So be creative, algorithm, code, operating system, and don't forget, it's not about just doing something with a technical bleeding edge, but have some fun doing it. Make the audience have some fun. Remember, it's going to be viewed. If you're making it for yourself, do whatever you'd like to do. But if you want it to be appreciated by an audience, keep that in mind. Another thing which is really important is, at a certain point, you'll want to develop the maturity to say, hey, you know what? I made this because it's what I wanted to make. I don't care what anyone else thinks. Because, like, for example, the invite took, quite honestly, a distributed development team that uses CVS because we cannot handle, you know, the standard get together with, you know, a whole bunch of your buddies in a room and so on. It just wasn't possible for us because we have people all across the country. We had an artist, technical artist, that needed preview tools. The whole shebang. I mean, this thing is almost like a game. You can take it off the rails. Using key codes, you can have essentially like Easter eggs. You can actually fly through the environment that's inside the invitation. So with that, at a certain point, you were like, hey, this is really cool. We love this. And it wasn't everyone's production. It was a production that basically we made to do homage to the scene. So someone that looks at it and says, oh yeah, that's neat. Isn't that like 1980s? Yes, that's the point. It's 1980s. It's a scroller. It's the Utah teapot. It's the Coke can. It's the pizza. It's the tubes. It's the spaceship from Future Crew. It's all those things. But it's not everyone's production. And to keep fired up about making something when, you know, you show it to someone and they might not appreciate it or they might think it's amazing, you just at a certain point have to do that inward sort of thing and say, okay, we're going to make it because it's cool. So one thing before I get into any questions. At this point, who's interested in making 4K intros? They might try their hand at it at some point. You know, even moderately so, okay? So what I'm just, keep your hands up, please, please. What I have here is a 50 megabyte mini disk. This is Compliments of the Northern Dragons. It has a variety of resources on it, which are all locally mirrored. We'll probably make the ISO available for it. Include source code, resources, nothing's really new. But the big thing is that it's all together. So when I talk about like the source code in C and C++ for that production from assembly, it's on the disk. The interface looks like this. Pop it in. Of course, my CD-ROM drive is going to sleep. So
is your PowerPoint from the top in here too?
For those without PowerPoint, cool things in small spaces. It's right there. So I can surf through all of it. Now, if anyone wants one after, what have you, just let me know. If we run out of disks, we can also duplicate it if you've got a burnable CD. So you can see all of the sort of the content here is discussed. You can actually run that sequence. So if you've got the disk now and you want to actually see drops and so on, just click this. You can go through the sequence on your own laptop. Details about algorithms, how to do music, geometry, functions. And what you'll notice is because things, like this drives me nuts, is that there's a really cool development site and it's got like the ultimate DirectX includes for Massim. So you can actually program DirectX using assembly and then it disappears and you can't get it anymore. So I've taken all the stuff that we've backed up and I've made every resource as possible, as much as possible, actually available on the disk locally, as much as possible. So this here is a preservation of the art of intros. So you can access all these pieces. And another thing is language info. So so you can say, okay, what is it to do Java? The discussion that I had about Java, the Java Developer Journal is right there. J3D notes, if you're first time doing it, this was an email. It's actually pulled from an email that I did to Syntax, saying, hey man, we can actually do this, and this is how I did it kind of thing, and I pulled it back, and I made it available here as well. And you can run those samples. So you've got all of this content available on the disk. EXE tweets, the tools that I talked about, EXE packers like APAC is on the disk, some other ones, EXE dropping, the dropper tools, the cab dropping articles, cab dropping tools, all of it is here. Now we're not saying any of this is new content, but it's all assembled, it's all convenient, and it's all there for you. So that's it. I'll open up to any questions about pretty much anything I've talked about. So, yeah.
The cab dropping is a hell of a lot more messy than I thought it was. Is it really that much? Is it worth all of that overcome? Matters? I mean, is the savings really that much? Is the algorithm that much better?
It's not a question of the algorithm. The savings is because you do not have, I mean, having the few bytes that say extract 32 or extract, that little bit that you have up there
is smaller than the decompression routine.
It's smaller than pretty much any decompression routine. And because you're calling extract, it's external,
gotcha.
Right?
Okay.
That's another advantage which like a Java platform has. Most Java programs can be basically pulled into a file called the Java file. Like a Java program. And those are often permitted to be considered executable programs. So the jar file is really a compressed file, and so you end up with that for free as well.
So,
yep. Who goes?
How do you handle debugging in these limited environments?
That depends. It depends on how you go about it.
I don't see any way around it except with like DOS debug or through a serial port or something weird like that.
Yeah. There are a few tools that can help sometimes. One of the biggest things that you can try to do is try to run your code as a window if you can. If you're doing it in DirectX, if you can do it windowed, that saves you, because then as soon as it goes bam, you know, you might be able to get some kind of debugging interface. You can still use like Visual Studio to debug executable programs. There are other programs which, let me see here.
I was thinking specifically of like the 256 byte category where
yep.
you don't ever have an exe.
When you're doing that, like I've done some very tight coding of that nature. I wrote part of a computer book about 3-4 years ago. And what it had was it was a ray tracer, a ray caster, sort of the Wolfenstein 3D graphics. It was written, it was actually included in the Revolutionary Guide to QBasic by Rox Press, which essentially meant that, like you'll see my name actually under additional material right in the middle of the book. There's a German, and then there's like Dave Valentine, so that's how I'm actually registered. So I'm not listed as an author of the book, but I'm listed under additional material. And that was a major pain, because I coded it in inline assembly in C as a prototype. The publisher saw that on an FTP site where I put my source code for fun, because I was coding computer graphics. And they said, hey, I want you to do it in QBasic. Now QBasic is 64K limited. It does not go past. QuickBasic has up to 640 kilobytes. It has no mnemonic assembler. The only options you have is a call absolute, which is straight hex. So you've got to basically go through the process of taking that assembly code and actually putting it in as hex. I'll tell you, first gray hairs maybe, you know, when I was doing that, it's not easy. Like, it was GPF all the time, you know, DOSBox I was running. It's not necessarily easy to do. Now, the advantage of 256 bytes is you have only 256 bytes to go wrong. So, there are...
A lot can go wrong.
Yeah. Now, there is one other thing you can do. The Massum distribution, which if you go to languages, and you go to assembly, you'll see I've got some discussion here. For Massum, this package has a windowed debugger. Sort of what you can do is you can send strings to it, and you can use that in your assembly language program to basically say, okay, I got here, I didn't get here, and it runs in a separate process, kind of similar to the debug window, like the output window, but you can, all you do is you link it in, you spit your strings to it, you can spit like floats, you can spit other pieces to it, and you end up with the, you know, this history, and your program's still going to die. Hopefully on a Windows environment, it's not going to die and reboot, because then you can go back to the other program, which will have the last string, you know, I got here and I died kind of thing. So that's something that's actually included in the Massim distribution. Now, here I've listed it as Microsoft Assembler, but it's packaged as a distribution. There are tons of source code examples, lots of tutorials, I don't know how to actually say his name because I've never actually talked with him, but Izellion. So like Izellion kind of thing. Lots of amazing content. And that's actually from massim32.com, so, which, of course, since I don't have my wireless enabled right now, won't work.